It's 7:30 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Beneduccio. The founder of Downstream Strategies gives water advice to the House Judiciary Committee.
My recommendation, because the session is ending soon and we need to take action sooner rather than later, is to remove the exclusions for now.
A story on this West Virginia morning. Senators had a full calendar yesterday, voting on 11 bills and 3 constitutional amendments. 2 bills authorizing salary increases had a retiring senator warning his colleagues to watch for future budget implications. Ashton Mara has more.
In a rare occurrence at the State House, senators debated 3 possible constitutional amendments on the floor, changes that will ultimately be sent to the people for their approval. Senate Joint Resolution 10 proposes a constitutional amendment designating the right to hunt and fish for West Virginians. Senator Corey Palumbo amended the resolution on the floor, clarifying that the people of West Virginia have the right to hunt and fish the state's game, but the state maintains the ability to regulate those activities. Senator Clark Barnes rose in opposition to the amendment, saying he's an avid hunter and angler himself, but he worried the resolution may interfere with personal property rights.
What I fear in this amendment is that we are trumping those private property rights which our ancestors were so concerned about. Mr. President, I'm not urging the fellow members to vote one way or another, but I did want to express my concerns. I don't believe that the right to hunt and fish trumps private property rights.
The amendment passed, and so did the resolution on a vote of 31-2, with Senators Barnes and Mike Hall voting against it. Senators then moved to Senate Joint Resolution 12, proposing a constitutional amendment claiming the waters of the state for the use and benefit of its citizens. The resolution came from Senate Majority Leader John Unger, who has been increasingly vocal about protecting the resource since the Elk River chemical spill last month.
It says, "It shall be the policy of the state of West Virginia that the water resources of this state shall be protected, conserved, utilized, and developed for the benefit, enjoyment, and general welfare of its citizens, consistent with and subject to the riparian rights and groundwater rights of the owners of real property."
The resolution passed unanimously. The final Senate joint resolution taken up for consideration was SJR 14, protecting the state's future fund and designating how the interest earned can be spent. The resolution couples with Senate Bill 461, Senate President Jeff Kessler's bill creating a future fund. The fund is created through statute, but as Senate Finance Chair Senator Roman Prezioso explained, how those funds can be used after its establishment must then be determined by the people. The amendment proposes restricting access to the principal for 6 years following its creation and restricts its appropriation for things like education, infrastructure, or tax relief measures. The resolution passed unanimously. If all 3 resolutions are passed by the House, they will appear on the ballot in November for approval by the people. Voting on the floor then transitioned to bills as senators discussed pay raises for 2 groups of state employees. First was Senate Bill 391, relating to teachers and school service personnel. Senate Bill 391 made its way through the committee process with major changes by both the Education and Finance Committees. The bill came from the governor and originally authorized a 2% across-the-board pay increase for teachers. Education Chair Senator Bob Plymouth tried to up that to a $1,000 raise, but Prezioso said the state couldn't find the additional $5 million that would have been added to the bill's bottom line. On the floor, Plymouth said he and the finance chair had reached a compromise, giving teachers an $874 a year raise. The compromise, he said, keeps the fiscal note at its original $32 million total, but also raises the starting salary for teachers to more than $32,000 a year, helping to attract young professionals to the field. His amendment was accepted and the bill passed with 2 voting against it, Senator Mitch Carmichael and Senator Brooks McCabe. West Virginia Education Association President Dale Lee said after the vote, the increase for teachers was a good first step, but he will push for the $1,000 teacher pay raise as the bill moves over to the House. But it was McCabe who stood at the end of the session to warn his fellow senators about the vote. McCabe had spoken against the pay raise in a Finance Committee meeting and reiterated his concerns.
"I'm not challenging the need for salary increases, particularly for the teachers. We've got salary increases that we need for our social workers, for right down the line. I mean, there are dozens and dozens of cases where we know we have to provide salary increases. We know we are grossly out of line, particularly on teacher salaries, and we have to address that. We have kind of stuck our finger in the dike this year by putting in a modest, yet important, but a modest salary increase, but we did it, in my opinion, on borrowed money. What I would hope the Senate would do is in the future, when we're posed with a salary increase, we look at it from the perspective of where is the money coming from? Do we have the money to spend? And most importantly, are we also addressing at the same time improvements in efficiency and effectiveness?
The senator, who is not seeking re-election this year, spoke in favor of another pay raise the body passed.
Let me point out a difference between these two bills. That particular piece of legislation will cost us in excess of $500,000 this year. Goes in the base budget, and that will go forward. There's one big difference. We have a huge backlog sitting in our regional jails of individuals who have not had the forensic work done on their case, so it cannot be brought up for trial. That cost is about $5 million a year. So we are saddling our counties with jail costs, regional jail costs, to the tune of approximately $5 million more than they should have to pay if we had a properly staffed and efficient forensic lab.
For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Ashton Mara in Charleston.
Senate Bill 373 relating to water resources protection was sent to the House nearly 1 month ago to go through three committee stops. 2 weeks ago, the bill made it through the Health and Human Resources Committee with amendments to be sent to the Judiciary Committee. Yesterday, the second committee used its meeting to hear from Downstream Strategies President Evan Hansen. Aaron Payne reports.
The Environmental Consulting Service recently did a preliminary study on potential pollution sources in what is called a zone of critical concern on the Elk River that was contaminated by the chemical spill from Freedom Industries. The study took into account a combination of driving around the river, looking on Google Earth at the area, and receiving reports from various agencies for potential contaminants in the zone where contaminants in the water would take 5 hours to reach a water intake. The report found 62 potential sources, including car dealerships, gas stations, and discharge pipes along the river leading to West Virginia American Water's intake. This information frightened some lawmakers, but Hansen assured this was positive news due to the ability to manage the threat.
It's true there's a lot of potential significant contaminant sources, but I think this is largely a good news report, not a bad news report, in that most of these are relatively small, easily managed potential sources that already have systems in place. For example, underground storage tanks at gas stations are regulated well and unlikely to leak.
The report also looked at potential contaminant sites which hold the same permit Freedom Industries had, leading to some confusion in regard to regulation. Hansen said he discovered 12 similar sites and offered a suggestion to help regulate them by way of issuing permits specific to each.
We recommend that individual permits be required if they're in the zone of critical concern. And the reason for that, number one, they would have to go out for public notice and comment. And number two, the DEP could include site-specific provisions that require them to take steps that are consistent with the source water protection plan.
Hansen believes that if this had been in place, the recent spill would have been prevented. After the presentation, delegates had many questions, one of which was asked by Delegate John McCuskey on how the zone of critical concern was determined.
My question involves the 25-mile/5-hour plan. Could you explain to me just a little bit what that is?
Well, the 5 hours is to try to protect an area such that if a spill occurred, it would get to the intake quickly. My understanding of the way that that zone is delineated is through some type of computer model that determines how fast the river flows in some conditions and where it takes 5 hours to get to the intake.
The original Senate bill included a number of exceptions for some storage tanks. Delegate Mike Manypenny asked Hansen what his recommendation for those exemptions would be.
There was a bill that came over from the Senate which had several exclusions for tanks under 1,100 gallons, I believe. What recommendations do you have in regards to those exclusions?
My recommendation, because the session is ending soon and we need to take action sooner rather than later, is to remove the exclusions for now. That doesn't mean that there might be some valid exclusions that should be included later.
Having heard the report, the Judiciary Committee will later determine if any amendments are needed before they approve the bill. Then Senate Bill 373 moves on to the Finance Committee. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Aaron Payne in Charleston.
This is West Virginia Morning at 740. West Virginia University's veteran population is pretty substantial. More than 1,000 veterans attend the school. But the university hasn't always been able to accommodate them in the best of ways. Officials are hoping that's about to change with one particular new space on campus. Tucked away on the ground floor of the university student union, known as the Mountain Lair, there is an office where you will find one of the most important figures at the school. That person is Jerry McCarthy, the director of the Office of WVU Veterans Affairs. He works with West Virginia University's student veteran population. McCarthy helps veterans meet other student veterans. Making the transition from soldier to student and getting often complicated, GI Bill benefits straightened out.
You can have the greatest program and services in the world. It just doesn't. But you have to wait on the VA in order to basically, for them to pay the bill and for them to pay the service members. So in many instances, service members still have to wait a certain length of time before they receive those benefits. So that's a point which they might get a bit frustrated.
One of those student veterans is Mark Combs, who is pursuing a Bachelor of Fine Arts degree in acting. Combs says he's very happy the veterans now have a student center area.
Yeah, it's definitely a step in the right direction. I was an officer for the veterans group on campus for years, and it was something that we had been pushing for since 2010, I want to say. We had been asking for a veterans center. And it's nice to finally see one.
While the university's center doesn't act as a full-time veterans lounge where the students can study and socialize, it does provide what McCarthy describes as a central hub for vets. He says when veterans come to campus, they look around for other veterans in veterans-only classes at the university, for example. McCarthy thinks more services are to come, particularly to help get veterans study and networking help.
So you have to make sure that you basically fit the need to the student. What does or will expand a lot is the mentor program. Having an Office of Veteran Affairs means that the mentor program now has the central location, so those mentors can get to those students who need their assistance. We have a new grant that we just wrote basically for a tutoring program.
Mark Combs is about a year away from graduating. He says the last major accomplishment he hopes to make with the Student Veterans Group is to establish a special financial fund called the Semper Fi Fund. This would act as a savings account at a bank where veterans could borrow money they need and then pay it back at a later time.
And it's like an emergency loan fund for veterans. You know, sometimes the VA doesn't pay you on time or at all, you know, whatever the circumstance may be, but just a little emergency fund. And I do think that sometimes veterans face these really unique and special issues, and, you know, there needs to be a little bit something extra there to help catch them. And so I would like to see the Semper Fi Fund be really picked up and ready for people by the time I leave.
Combs says he also hopes the Student Veteran Resource Center expands in the near future. Officials at the Cabell-Huntington Coalition for the Homeless are taking a new approach to the problem of homelessness and unemployment. Clark Davis has more on the Jobs First program.
Jessica Bivens and her husband live at the Huntington City Mission for now. She's one of many homeless people in Huntington who are involved in the Jobs First program at the Cabell-Huntington Coalition for the Homeless.
They've helped me with quite a bit. They post jobs every day. You know, if anything new comes up, they try to post them or at least tell everybody about them. They have the computer access for us. If we need help with the interviews or getting to the interviews, they offer bus passes. They actually sent me and got me help with Dress for Success.
Jobs First is a new idea developed by coalitions around the country. Instead of working with job candidates by training, developing, and molding them before they apply for jobs, Jobs First helps them find jobs right away and continues to train them while they're employed. Bob Hansen is executive director of the Homeless Coalition.
They have an emergency need for income, and if you have to have so many steps for them to follow and to do successfully before they can get a job, they'll drop out. They won't succeed. So Jobs First has been really successful helping people with that immediate need of finding a job, getting a source of income for folks.
Hansen says the idea is based on the approach the coalition has always taken by helping to find homeless people shelter first. Helping the unemployed and homeless find work first puts them one step closer to a stable living environment where they can provide for themselves. The Huntington Coalition started the program last July with a goal of helping 10% of Huntington's homeless gain employment in a year. Amanda Coleman is engagement specialist for the coalition. She's also serving as Jobs First team leader.
Jobs First is a supported employment program, and our goal is to, as quickly as possible, get homeless people onto the job market. So we meet them where they are. We don't spend a lot of time on vocational rehabilitation or prepping. We do those things, but we do it as we're going through the job search process.
The coalition offers help ranging from finding the proper clothing, getting to and from the new job, and keeping that job. Coleman says there's help throughout the entire process.
And then once people are employed, we provide support after they're employed. So people will come in and say, for instance, I'm having trouble with somebody at work. I'm not sure how to deal with it. This is how I would have dealt with it in the past. What's your advice? So we want to remove all the barriers to employment, but also the barriers that would keep them from maintaining their employment.
Coleman says this idea just makes more sense because people are sometimes still living on the streets and are not even in shelters.
Income is the road to housing. Whether it's on their own or subsidized housing, they move up housing lists more quickly if they have income. So instead of spending several months putting them through employment classes and trying to prepare them, we immediately start working with them to get them on the job market.
So far, the program has helped find jobs in telemarketing, fast food, offices, and even on river barges. The program has placed 30 people in jobs, and as word of mouth has grown throughout the homeless community, the pace has picked up recently, with 9 people finding jobs in January. Hansen says the program's popularity just continues to grow.
I think it just takes time. And in celebrating successes. And it's interesting, a lot of people who are homeless also, you know, are savvy with social media. So we put, you know, our success stories, some of them on our Facebook page so that, you know, that word can get out that people can succeed.
Jessica Bivens has been on 4 interviews herself in the last couple of weeks and is hoping to be one of the success stories.
To start with, it'd feel really nice to be back on my feet again. Thanks to these people, I've stayed sane. But employment would not only, you know, make me feel better about myself, but it'll put me one step closer to the goal.
That goal, to have her own place to live. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Clark Davis in Huntington.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting's news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. West Virginia Morning is produced with the assistance of Cecilia Mason, Suzanne Higgins, Clark Davis, Jessica Lilly, Glynis Board, Dave Mistich, Ashton Mara, and Beth Voorhees. Our director is Bob Powell. I'm Beneduccio. Good morning.